Alright, this is the Anarchist News Podcast for May 20th, 2024. I'm Donnie fucking Don't.
And I'm Danny Do It. Do It. Do It.
Yes. And the topic of the week is the students. Last month, we asked you to discuss anarchist participation in the Free Gaza protests, and you had a lot to say about it. Something that has received a ton of attention in the past and doesn't seem to be receiving as much now are critiques of the student as a subject, as a role, as a prescribed way of existing in society, with noteworthy capacities and limits to make total destroy or anarchy or social change. Sometimes the liminality of student life is emphasized. Sometimes the campus is explored as a testing ground for radical ways of living differently. Sometimes the institutions that structure education and the experiences of students are examined. Sometimes the teacher-student relationship itself is investigated for possibilities. One example is the 1966 Situationist text on the poverty of student life. But there have been many titles since written about times of massive student uprisings and occupations. Some examples of anarchic alternatives to the student role that have been proposed: apprenticeship-mentorship relationships, informal guidance and advice, DIY-ness, autodidactism, etc. What are your thoughts about all this? Are students in a special situation that enables them to accomplish things that otherwise difficult for non-students? Does it matter where they are students? To what extent does the reproduction of capitalism and the state depend on these systems of education and the roles they establish? Can they be challenged or changed from within? What does history tell us? What do you think about the way that students are thought about by other sections of society? How has the category of student changed over time? And how has the administration of students changed over time? I guess I feel like there are students as a class, there's like two distinct types of students, right? There are students that if they get, as far as like students' ability to act as a class, like there are students that if they get kicked out, they just become schlubs like the rest of us, like rich kids, right? Where the worst thing that can possibly happen to you is that you wind up exactly where I am right now, right? Just like a dude with a job and rent. And then there are students who have taken out considerable amounts of debt, right? And like the thing that happens if they get thrown out is that they're saddled with hundreds of additional dollars in bills a month and also don't have the credentials that they were going for.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, that makes sense. I would argue maybe there's even more than two types of students in society at this point. But yeah, that you're absolutely right about the two classes. I mean, when we think about it, that gets down to what are we talking about when we say student, right? I mean, within the stratus of that, not just like elite private institutions, but also like, you know, a lot of high school students are really involving themselves in this stuff. So in terms of the power of a student in a social movement, as a bigger question outside of, say, for example, like divestment from the occupation, but like what is their role? What is the class of these other students with or without a political struggle? Are they an oppressed class, right?
Right. I mean, I guess high school students, like I feel like it's a tried and true, like our high school looked like a prison. Mm-hmm. It was literally designed by like an architect who did prisons. And it's largely organized similarly, where you have to just be at a certain place all the time. And if you're ever out of that place, you need permission. College students, I think, even though they're not a group I've traditionally been very sympathetic to, I do think that like conceiving of, especially universities where you live, as like a college, as like a a company town in a lot of ways, you know, where there it actually is a lot at stake when you, especially, you know, if you dissent in ways outside of the ways they want you to, where like, as and we're seeing this on, at Columbia, I think, or a couple of those colleges where students are losing, even the ones that are not losing their ability to go to class because of remote learning, like are losing their ability to be on campus. Right. And so it's like when you used to go on strike in a coal town or whatever, they could kick you out of your housing tomorrow. Your housing was tied to it. You, and in this case, like your meal plan is tied to it.
Yeah.
Like you've borrowed money, assuming you're taking out loans, and you've paid in advance for food and housing and shit.
Yeah.
You're not probably not holding a job unless it maybe it's a campus job.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, like you're kicked the fuck off campus.
Yeah, I've heard about that. I was very surprised to see that being done. I'm sure that that's a topic that the listeners are intimately familiar with, so I'm not going to bore them with the details of what I heard on Democracy Now. But that actually puts them, you know, we often hear about the power of students, the power of young people to use their voices, and that that movements are always driven by young people and all of that. And the universities have shown that young people are extremely vulnerable, actually, because they don't, maybe, you know, the stereotypical Jim Belushi college sweater wearing college kid is not the college kid of today, I don't think. There's people are in graduate school, which could mean that they're, you know, trying to get a $4,000 a year raise at the library or something while they're working. And this happens a lot. People pulling double shifts where they're paying to work their second shift to get a piece of, to get a receipt to, because of the bureaucratization of our society. I mean, in that way, I think that education is something that drives our economy forward, right? Or is supposed to do that, correct? And to get to the question that does the economy rely on education to function and to recuperate itself and all of that, the answer is yes, all economies require education. And I think one of the other issues, one of the things that these college kids of all kinds are really getting duped on is that they have no bargaining power to like negotiate, you know, to negotiate their rates and all of that stuff of their education, which is, like I said, for city service jobs, for education and other things, you have to be a part of the system. And even like, I think the police force and stuff requires this. And everybody at every level of it is cynical about the utility of it. It's really not, it's not serving our economy. It's not serving that. And so if thinking about students in the role of a, you know, a vaster kind of question, education is obviously necessary and important for it. But our system right now is not being served by education, I don't think, in that way. And so students do have, like, the going to college seems to be, you know, something that, that barely provides the promise of economic security.
Yeah, definitely doesn't provide the promise of economic security at this point. Oh, yeah, I've definitely run into, at a lot of different, like, job trajectories I've been on, run into a paper ceiling where, like, it's just a matter of a degree, basically.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, no, I think, yeah, students wind up being, yeah, very vulnerable, where something that you do in college can derail your ability to engage in society in a number of ways, depending on what you're trying to do. You know, like a law student or something like that.
Yeah.
But really anything, to be a teacher, to be,
yeah,
like the fact that they already have your money, I think is really, is huge, you know, and, sure, and the fact that, that a lot of these schools, especially the nice ones, are competitive, right? Where like they can replace you next year. Like that's not, Columbia isn't hard up for customers, you know?
Yeah. But so at the end of the day, what is the college student's underlying motivation? I mean, what is a student activist's underlying motivation from that student perspective? Like, are they seeing it as a company town issue or is...
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that there's college-oriented activism, and then there's, like, world-oriented activism from a college.
Yes.
You know, and those are two definitely different things. And I think maybe, like, yeah, I don't know about the changing universities from the inside. Definitely making them cheaper. I mean, that's some, like, deep reformist stuff, which I don't know if, like, the A-News podcast wants to hear that. I'm, like, getting a lot less ambitious in my old age, so... like free education. That sounds great to me. Even within like older institutions, but
I mean, the TrueAnon podcast gave a great rundown of how the public education access to it has changed over the years. That's a definitely highly recommended listen on this. If you want, you can turn this off right now and put their podcast on.
And then come right back.
Then come right back
in time for the ad breaks.
Yes, come back in time for the
ad breaks. Yeah, this thing doesn't pay for itself, you know.
And when they start talking about their Patreon, you should just come back to this one.
Yeah.
And we'll all be on the same page after that.
Yeah, like and subscribe. Join our Patreon. For only $5 extra a month, you get one paywalled episode a week.
Where Donnie Don't uses the N-word. For $5 a month. Danny Do It. I mean, that's me. I convinced him to I convinced him for that one.
Oh my God. But yeah, no, so where else were we on here? We had some notes.
Oh yeah. So yeah, I mean, I want to talk about the graduate students who are working class graduate students.
Right, because at the point of a graduate student, you're basically an employee.
Exactly. Well, and yes. Or you're in night school, like basically like the, you know, Roseanne, remember that show, Roseanne?
Yeah.
I believe she like went back to school or something at some point while she was working at the factory. And like, you know, you see how stressed out she is and like, it's a really hard thing. And even though she had a great husband and
the best husband,
a really great husband. And even they had hard times, you know, but like, it was really hard. She made it through. She did it. But like, is that something that we all have to do in order to advance in society, not advance, in order to like
get our head above water,
to get on a pay scale that keeps up with inflation. Exactly. Like, and most of this stuff is not even to keep like managerial, to advance your, it's like just you have to do it eventually, you know? So I've seen colleagues and coworkers for sure looking like Roseanne in this thing, trying to essentially, I've already said it, but trying to essentially get just a tiny raise.
Yeah, yeah. No, like my friends who are nurses have to figure out how to be a full-time nurse, but also go back to school so that by the time they're like 55, they're not still having to like flip patients and throw out their fucking back, you know?
Yeah,
and exactly. Like they can't take time off of work.
Yeah.
Because who's going to pay for that? But then also like...
And they wouldn't even have a job if they did, right?
Right.
So it's part of, it is indeed part of the institutions, like the our system, the way that it works. I don't think that it's designed that way in a masterful kind of form. I think that it's a clusterfuck that has happened that benefits the capitalist system in some way. But in that it burns us out so that we just die of opioid addiction instead of start a rebellion for the most part.
Yeah, see, I think it might be a little more intentional than that. I've been a bit conspiracy brained lately where a lot of things that I see fit into this like broader picture of like since the 60s and 70s, like societal shifts that were made in order to like better subjugate the various classes of people that gave them problems.
Uh-huh.
And I definitely think that like you wouldn't have like the Black Panthers coming out of like a UC system right now, right? Because it's like a terribly expensive, right? It was basically free.
Yeah.
Like the University of California system was basically free in the 60s. Like anyone could go and you weren't $100,000 in debt if you got kicked out or whatever. And so you could like, you could fuck around a bit. You know what I mean? And I think now, like if you get into like a good school in California, like you should probably I'm really glad people aren't doing this, but like honestly, like you, like to a friend, I would say like keep your fucking head down and get your degree, you know?
Yeah, and that's that is sort of the new deal, right? That we don't have students who have nothing to lose. We don't have anybody. Yeah, the students are not the ones with impunity. I mean, workers aren't either. High school students have indeed exercised their power throughout history in the United States. Not all the time, but even like younger students in the beginning of the 20th century. And, you know, when kids had to work in factories before, they still had to attend school. It was compulsory. And they, you know, one of their major organizing points was they wanted more time for school and less time working in the factories. Now, of course, you know, they were just fucking stupid kids. So they didn't realize that it might be just as boring to be in school 8 hours a day. And everybody was like, well, the kids said it in 1920, so that's it. But, you know, high school kids now do have legitimate gripes, like, all over the place about, like you said, high schools are built like prisons, you know, almost across the board. They're underfunded. They are not, they are relevant to people, but there is a big push within a lot of communities and in colleges, I've noticed as well, especially public colleges, to really belittle the liberal arts side and to actually, you know, exalt the trade school kind of side. And my hot take is I don't disagree with that entirely, that you know, job training and stuff, and that it's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, on one hand, when you're paying a lot of money for something, you want the most important parts of it, but also, like, I think the liberal arts aspects are the thing that keep us from getting, like, sociopathic Google employees making surveillance tech for, like, Israel or whatever. You know what I mean? Like yeah. Maybe the whole thing needs to be reoriented, but you definitely need, like, ethics classes along with your engineering classes.
Sure, sure. Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point.
And probably a history class as part of that ethics course, you know?
And, I mean, people should explore their writing talents and do what they want to do. Or, you know, acting or math, if it's crazy. You know what I mean? Like, all the shit. But at this point in society, with bread costing like $6 a loaf, is anybody gonna continue to think that it's justifiable to pay money to learn about British poetry? And my take is no. And I think our high schools are still preparing us just in case we want to learn about British poetry. I fucking don't honestly mind if kids in the future don't know who Emily Dickinson is. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
They'll find it. It's online. You know? I don't think that they need to be force-fed it on a mass level or, like, have to demonstrate. And so I think that is a legitimate gripe of basically every student on Earth, you know? That they have no control over what they learn, how they're assessed.
But also, and this is going to be, like an anti-youth lib take or whatever, Like, we were just discussing this the other day, like, I can't think of a really good decision I made when I was young. Like, I was fucking stupid. The things I thought I was going to need, I didn't need. The things I thought I wasn't going to need. You know, like, I walked out of Spanish class halfway through sophomore year.
Yeah.
And never went back because I didn't like the teacher.
Yep.
You know, and, like, and similarly, like, I didn't, like, I took a journalism class and the teacher sucked. And so I just, like, quit fucking journalism in high school. And just stuff like that where I'm like, what was I thinking? You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing is, like, there are certain things where, at least within the structure of a school.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think your average, again, not to diss kids, but, like fucking vaping on your hoverboard teen, like, actually knows what, I'm not going to let that kid pick what they get to learn.
Well, sure. But you were obviously allowed to pick the two things, which now you think would have been, right? Like, now you think would have been cool to learn about. But that was part of the menu, right? Still, was it necessary to have on the menu? I don't know. Like, all the stuff that was. I agree with you that kids should, you're right, kids should just, in a lot of ways, they do accept, like, the teacher as somebody who knows what they should learn, right? But they are at that person's mercy, and there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of inefficient systems that sort of govern what it is those kids learn eventually.
Yeah.
Inefficient systems is a weird thing to say, because I don't think it should be more efficient, but a lot of
backwards ass shit, basically.
Backwards stuff, yeah. I don't know.
All right. So my very brief stint in college was actually with you, and we did some on-campus activism, and then I went and lived in a college town first a major city and then a college town where I interacted a lot with student groups, but as, like, an off-campus agitator or whatever you want to call it. And in both those situations where, when we were students, we were actually kind of competing with an off-campus group that had a front group on campus, and then later I was the person, or part of a group of people interacting with a campus where we essentially had front groups on campus. I think that's a dynamic we should hit on.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, I think that is so interesting because, like, here again, the students really are, nobody gives a shit what they think, you know? Like, the idea of a group that starts college clubs to siphon off funds from the university, essentially. I mean, frats do it too. You know, it's not nefarious. It's very, very, very much, there is a whole industry around campus life organizations. And, you know, radicals are a part of it. And here again, this is an example of students, basically nobody gives a shit about them. It's for the better of the organization. Though, it is for the better of the organization, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, we were in an anti-war group, because we're fucking old at this point, in like 2003, basically. Yeah. And yeah, the was constantly trying to use our group.
Should we redact their actual name?
Why?
Let's not say their name. Can we bleep out their name?
Sure.
Because this could be literally any party with a newspaper, and it applies to them equally.
Fair enough.
So this is not like a hit piece on them. I've been accused of red baiting before. I don't want to get a...
I'm too red to red bait.
Yeah, no. Yeah, good one. Do it. Go with red bait. Do it.
No, and again, like, I don't fault them. At the time, I faulted them for it, and now, like, I honestly kind of don't, you know? I went on to, live in a city and use their animal rights group as, like, a funnel to a particular anti-vivisection campaign in the early 2000s, and then I went and lived in a college town where, like, a student anarchist group was set up that, like, rapidly ascended to having a budget larger than the campus Republicans, because when we'd bring speakers, like, other anarchists would come from all over the state, and funding was based on the turnout for your various events. Yeah, the attendance.
That's so cool.
I'm not hating on the unnamed socialist organization that used our anti-war group, but, like,
it is true that they essentially really sideboarded that movement. It was a pain in the ass to work with them, because it was obvious that no matter what you do, the speaker who's showing up is actually the guy whose like whole career is funded by student activities fees all over the country.
Yeah, I guess the animal rights and the anarchist groups I was part of did the students better than that.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, yeah, there's people selling your newspaper, and the guy, I remember meeting the guy, and he was like, you know, he had all the bylines, because I'd read their paper, you know, there's, okay, one of the better ones of the ilk. But I mean, yeah, all of these Trotsky groups do it. It's part of their tactics. It's why they're on college campuses. I guess maybe out of old ritual, they also flock to them to think that kids are radical. But up until, you know, 2 months ago, that seemed like an outdated thought to me.
Yeah. Well, and we were talking about this a little bit before. Like, I think it's not that the kids are inherently radical, but, and I'm not the first to say this either, but the thing that college students really have that a lot of America, especially outside of cities, don't have is, like, walkable communities where you actually know your neighbors. And so, like, just the infrastructure and architecture of the situation is a better organizing space, mm-hmm. where it's not inherent to the student. Like, if you had... When you have workers living in conditions like that where, like... you know, an apartment building where you actually know some of your neighbors or whatever, like, you get organizing, you know, or a workplace where you have hundreds of people in that same workplace and you're not all, like, atomized behind computer screens at your homes, or just, like, half a dozen of you in each branch of, you know, some conglomerate or whatever, like, organizing does happen more rapidly.
True. And also, and more than that, I mean, thinking about our comrades in the unnamed socialist organization from that time, they all attended classes together because, you know, the cadre was like eight.
right,
or something. So they took all the same classes, political science classes.
Did they? I didn't realize that. That's wild.
I mean, and I will say that they were very dedicated and knew exactly what was going on and were actually very transparent with me about it. It's how I'm able to talk about it at all, you know?
Yeah.
And they were just like, yeah, well, of course, like, we need to fund our leader. So we sell his newspaper and give him our student activities fees. There was never a pizza at those meetings. There was never a sandwich, not a drop to drink, just pure meeting space.
Yeah, I do recall that. That's funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah. And I guess in some ways, like, that, I compared the two, but, like, that does feel a little bit more exploitative in some ways than, yeah, the kind of thing that I engaged in, which was, like, hey, have an anarchist club on campus and have the thing for that to be recruiting these kids to off-campus projects like our anarchist bookstore, like our books to prisoners, like our really, really free market. And, like actually, like, get these kids to, like, leave campus and engage in the shit that, like, if you're interested in anarchy, like, your the anarchy club is where you will find the anarchists, not where you will do your anarchy.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
And
so, can they make Total Destroy is the question.
Can anyone make Total Destroy?
I mean, yeah, that's a good point. Alone, no, but...
Total Destroy of what, I guess? You know, like, I mean, can they sink Columbia? Like, can they...
Let's say make Total Destroy.
I don't know what it means. I mean, I know what it means. I was, like, there in 2004 or whatever, yeah. But, like, I don't...
Let's say it was... Because was the language they used, right?
Yeah.
So let's say make Total Destroy is the... Whatever the trifecta, you know, the workers, the students, and the...
Oogles.
And the Oogles, I guess. Yeah, that's right. So, in China, they had the workers, the peasants, and the military, and the students was like a thing.
Okay.
And then, yes, this in our country, it's the workers. I mean, we have to acknowledge the homeless. Absolutely.
I'm putting that all under Oogles. It's
they're all Oogles.
Okay. No, that's super rude.
Do it. Yeah.
But just
all homeless are Oogles. That's a good take.
But just Oogles as the non class or whatever, you know, the miscellaneous. Sure. The person. Oogles as the person who is not entitled to act in whatever space it is, you know, where they're like,
sure.
You don't even work here,
yeah.
Or like, you don't even go to this school,
yeah.
Or like, you're not a customer at this bank. Like, why are you complaining?
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
That's
a good point.
I'm calling that, I'm renaming the lumpen proletariat or whatever god awful name they had. That's just the Oogles.
That's,
you know,
the Oogles as a class of people kind of hits. I think that next week's topic of the week, should we hang Donnie Don't by the nuts or by the arms?
Right.
Just kidding. You guys have a sense of humor.
Yeah. All right. For May 20th, I'm Donnie fucking Don't.
I'm Danny Do It. Do It. Do It.
And that's fucking A News.